And we are back. My microphone was muted. I can't fuss at Dale Jackson if I'm going to do that. All right, we're back. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio. Don't say a word, Boomer.
You almost gave me a heart attack. I was about to jump under the desk again. I was like, oh, no.
Let's just try that from the start. Ready? Hey, we're back. Bill Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, plain right. There, we're in. Okay, now we can do the show. Today at 4 o'clock, by the way, we got the Grand Council with my two brethren, Jeff Poor and Dale Jackson. And Dale for like the last 3 weeks in a row has forgotten to unmute his microphone at the appropriate time, and I keep giving him a ration, and I just did it. So don't anybody tell Dale. Nobody tell Dale. It's just between us, all right? Anyway. All right, there's that. Hey, listen, I gotta tell you guys. So yesterday and many other times, by the way, I have touted the fact that on the Right Side Store, which is on our website, rightsideradio.org, on the Right Side Store at rightsideradio.org, you can order stuff like T-shirts, coffee mugs, stickers with the Right Side logo, and I'm holding it up for the camera right now, and you can get Right Side socks, I'm telling you. Wait, in the camera. There we go. Okay, I got it. There we go. I'm telling you, I'm all about the Right Side socks. And Boomer, I wore the green ones just for you today.
I saw that. I saw it on the video and in person.
And now the whole world is wondering if I go sockless in studio. No, I just put my shoes back on. All right, so anyway, yeah, the rightsideradio.org website's got all our stuff on it. So if you... I always tell folks, if you find yourself getting outside the overly broad range of our AM-FM capability, which now is exceedingly large, we have somewhere in the neighborhood of like over 200,000 watts worth of broadcast capabilities just booming across North Alabama from Clanton all the way to the Tennessee line. But if you find yourself getting out of that range, well, all you got to do is go to rightsideradio.org, click on the live stream, the button that says live stream or tab, live stream. You can watch it on video like I'm doing right now, which is crazy. You can live stream the audio. No matter where you are in the big wide world, go to the World Wide Web, click on rightsideradio.org, and no matter where you is, there we is. That being said, the podcast is still kicking, and lots of downloads on the podcast. And hey, Boomer, when you get a chance, take a look and see if the Buzz Patterson interview is trending up. I bet it is. I had somebody today email me and said, what was the name of his book? I want to order it, which I thought was pretty cool. So, yeah, Buzz got another book sale, at least one or nine out of that. What you got?
Yeah, it's trending up for sure.
Okay, so is it one of our top ones right now?
Right now, it's getting up there. It's climbing all the way to the top. It's going to be one of the top ones very soon, like top.
Nice. Well, yeah, if you didn't hear the interview with Buzz Patterson, he wrote the book Dereliction of Duty. He was Bill Clinton's military aide. He carried the nuclear football for Clinton, and he was also the one who discovered that Clinton had lost his nuclear codes and did not even know where they were. I mean, the book is amazing. Well, so was the interview. Well, that's on our podcasting. So all those back episodes, you can find them. The one with Ted Nugent. You can find the one with Lieutenant Governor Ainsworth. You can find the one with Jared Hudson, who's running for sheriff, the former Navy SEAL, who's now running for sheriff in Jefferson County. All these interviews are on there, and the podcast is kicking. So anyway, rightsideradio.org has got all of our stuff. Okay. Now, let me go ahead and kick off the Triple Dipper. Knowing full well I have a break in about a minute and a half, I'll go ahead and lay the groundwork for it. Did you know, and some of you ruffians, I know you knew, but did you know that literally Alabama is once again at the forefront about to potentially have something happen at the Supreme Court of the United States that will impact all 50 states in the way that we draw the lines for our political districts? In this case, congressional districts. And here's the rub, all right? The districts that we have right now are largely unchanged. And I remember for a fact the 4th Congressional District where I live right now, where the Right Side Studio sits, that's Congressman Adderholt's district. The 4th Congressional District did get changed in the 2011 redistricting session. He kind of carved it up a little bit. My brother, Scott Beeson, who filled in for me recently, he dropped an amendment on that thing. I did not care for it, but I tried to stop it, but I was one man. But anyway, All that to say, the by and large, though, the districts are not much different than they've been since 1992. And yet now, in drawing the districts, we are subject to certain aspects of the Voting Rights Act, Section 2 in particular. I'll tell you about it in a minute. But the bottom line is this. There is now a lawsuit that alleges that we have seen Alabama legislative processes pack black Alabamians. They call it packing. Pack black Alabamians too much into one district, and they should have been allowed to have racially two districts. Well, it's a conundrum. Can you say racism, but yet your means of fixing it is to use racial profiling? Interesting. It's before the Supreme Court right now. Oral arguments in about 3 weeks. Alabama law could change the landscape of redistricting law around the nation. Tell you more about it in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Man, I'm talking about south of Clanton, north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa to Gadsden, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, pieces of them thrown in just for good measure. There you go. Solid conservative and just plain right is what I say. All right, so hey, listen, we're in number one of the Triple Dipper. Politics inside the lines. And what I'm saying there is, just a euphemistic title, it basically talks about the fact that when you draw the district lines, it gets very political at times. I've been a part of redistricting in the Alabama legislature, and it was probably one of the most knockdown, drag-out fights I've ever seen. I mean, it was screaming, it was carrying on, and I'll never forget. We were trying to get past the Democrats filibustering. They even at one point demanded that the bill be read at length, which basically is an old-school rule still on the books that dates back to days before you had copy machines. And if a senator or a representative felt like he or she did not fully have an opportunity to see the entire bill before voting on it, they could ask that it be read at length, and they would have to read it at length. In the Alabama Senate, there's a guy whose job it is to literally read the bills out. And most of the times he's able to read what's called the cover or read the synopsis. But then when someone gets up and goes, in my our case, Lieutenant Governor Ivey was at the helm, and he'd say, Madam President, I move the bill be read at length. It's non-debatable. It has to be read. And next thing you know, it starts reading. Well, this thing was literally so long they had to turn on a special reading machine, and it began reading in a computerized voice. And it was scheduled to play for the next 2 days, nonstop. That's how long it would take to read it. Because you're reading about every street and corner and district line in the entire state of Alabama. But it was that's how contentious it is. When you draw the district lines, you're telling people where they'll vote or where they will run for office. I mean, people get kind of fired up sometimes, and I get it. But then I look at some of the cases, and so the one we got right now, so Alabama, the Supreme Court of the United States, is about to decide Alabama's redistricting case on October 4th. So we're looking at literally 3 weeks? Yeah, 3 weeks away. And I got to say, this time, whereas we have been to court before at least twice on the redistricting of Alabama's state legislature district lines, this one is going after the congressional district lines. And it's so interesting to me that what's being claimed right now is that what has been pretty much in place since 1992 is now suddenly discriminatory. I don't think the black population of Alabama grew so significantly that it changed the demographic makeup of the state. The black population of Alabama, according to the articles I've got in my hands right now, is roughly 27% of the state, so a little over one-fourth the population of Alabama. But right now, of the seven congressional districts we have, one of them has been drawn since the early 90s to be a predominantly black district, and that is, it's Congresswoman Terry Sewell. I just forgot the actual, I think it's District 5, but I'm not positive. Don't hold me to that. End result of this is you've got one majority-minority district drawn for congressional districts in Alabama. The lawsuit now claims there should have been two. How they got to this, I don't know. They ran their models, and they came up with, we think there should have been two. Here's my question. If you are fixing racism by applying racism, doesn't that seem antithetical to law and common sense? Because what they're saying is, you did not use race when you made the decision. Well, the last time we got sued is because they said we did use race. But now they're saying you did not use enough race when you considered the district lines for Congress, for congressional districts. And so here we are. The case is now Merrill v. Milligan. The U.S. Supreme Court is going to decide, according to an article I pulled off of the National Conference of State Legislatures, dated July 26th. In Merrill v. Milligan, the U.S. Supreme Court will decide whether Alabama's 2021 congressional redistricting plan, which contains one majority black district, violates Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Claims are that the plan unlawfully dilutes the votes of the state's black population and should contain a second majority black district. The three-judge panel, so here's the thing. They did file suit. It went to a three-judge panel at the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's right. And the three-judge panel agreed and said, yeah, they should have drawn that differently. Whew. You know when they came back with that decision? About 60 to 90 days before the primaries. And like, everybody's like, wait a minute. We don't have time to redraw the lines and then go to an election. We don't even know if we'll have people in the same districts they're running for now. How do we do this, Judge? Not my problem, said the three-judge panel. So they went to the Supreme Court of the United States, which put a stay on it. In January or February of this year, Supreme Court of the United States issued a preliminary injunction. And all that does is preserve the status quo. Now, liberals got freaked out. Oh, the Supreme Court is falling in favor of Alabama's racist congressional lines. No, they didn't. They just said, hey, you can't make a state go to an election right now like this with redrawing the lines at the last second. So they just preserve the status quo. Status quo is now locked in until they can actually hear final oral arguments on the merits of the overall case on appeal. So Merrill v. Milligan's the case. It's preliminary enjoined. Everybody ran this year on the districts. And by next year, we'll know whether they get to stay in those districts or have them redrawn. That's big doings, I'm just telling you. Well, here's the deal. Here's what they have to prove. The burden of proof right now is on the plaintiffs, on the ones who claim it's racist or was unlawful or a violation of the Voting Rights Act. Okay. The Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act has already been struck down in 2013. It's Section 2 we're worried about. That's the one that prohibits what they call vote dilution. Well, it's not dilution if you have one central district. What they are saying, though, is you fractured enough of the black population into other districts that you've now diluted their ability to have weight in the overall vote if indeed they vote differently. Here's what you have to prove. Three things have to be proven. This is a story from the Epoch Times, dated August 2nd. Number one, you have to prove that a minority group consists of at least 50% of the voters in that area. Bam. Number two, you have to prove the minority group tends to vote cohesively and they are like-minded. Okay. And number three, and most importantly, it must be shown that racially polarized voting where the white voters consistently defeat the minority voters is the mode, all right? So that's what they're claiming. And throughout, here's the deal. When the state of Alabama is defending the existing district lines, when the state of Alabama defended it, they made the point, and apparently it was agreed, they did not put race into the automatic generating system that puts out the versions of maps that could work. It says millions of illustrative maps were generated by the plaintiff's own experts, the ones who were complaining. using algorithms programmed not to consider race never ever resulted in majority-minority black districts. It never worked out that way, but they claimed that it should have, even though it didn't when they did the models. Alabama says they ran it race neutral. We're going to find out what the Supreme Court says in a few weeks. Just so you know, just to go ahead and add some icing to the cake, you might be pleased to know that according to a story in July from AL.com, that New York City Mayor Eric Adams is joining in the fight against Alabama. Well, now, New York City Mayor Eric Adams took time off from being a sanctuary city, I guess. New York City, it says, is joining in the fight against voter redistricting in Alabama, saying the plan would dilute the votes of black Americans and disenfranchise millions. Mayor Eric Adams has filed an amicus brief in the case of Merrill v. Milliken. So yes, the mayor of New York City, along with, by the way, mayors of Montgomery, Los Angeles, Oakland, San Diego, California, Boston, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, San Francisco, and Denver, oh, look, all Democrats, have now filed briefs claiming that in some way, for the first time since 1992, the district lines are racially unjust. Okay, I got a little more on this. Let's do this, Boomer. I'm going to go ahead and take a break right now, about a minute or two ahead of schedule. I'll do that, come back, and wrap this up. But I thought it was important you guys know. Man, this is huge. This is literally huge. This three-judge panel made its ruling, and now it's on appeal. But there are folks right now who are saying that what Alabama's case does before the Supreme Court is literally going to change the lay of the land for voting redistricting laws nationwide. That's pretty epic. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We'll be right back. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Well, listen, I'm trying to sort of lay it out for you how important what is about to happen for the Supreme Court of the United States really is. Who you vote for in Congress, and perhaps who you vote for in any district in which the legislature has to redraw the lines every 10 years, because that's the law. When the legislature receives back the census data at the end of the 10-year census, every 10 years, they are required to go examine them, and under state law, they have to then redistrict the state based upon population shifts. That's why it was such a huge deal that Alabama wound up not losing a seat in Congress, because on the national scale, we thought we were going to see redistricting nationally reduce the amount of representation we had in Congress. We didn't. California, New York, they both lost. They lost Congress people or congressional districts. Alabama didn't. We held on. But then even within the state, like for instance, there was a shift such that as you could see Madison County growing. When we did it in 2011, you could already see Madison County exploding. And, you know, I used to kind of chide my buddy Bill Holtzclaw, who was in the state Senate from that area at the time. Holtzclaw had a district since he was in Madison where basically he could drive across his entire district in about 15 minutes because it was population was so dense because it's based on population. Me, I had a lot of rural areas in mind. I had parts of four counties. If I went to the furthest reach, I could start at one side. It'd take me an hour and a half to drive to the other end of my district. That's because it was so far away and so rural because the population was so spread out. Redistricting is a huge deal. I don't think I ever realized this until I actually got in the legislature, began to recognize the impact it can have when you draw the lines on a new district. Well, right now, one expert, according to the Epoch Times, is saying that what the court decides about Alabama's redistricting in the next few weeks, what the court decides will address and possibly change how states practice redistricting in the future. All states. What comes down out of this case, all states. That's why it's such a big deal. That's why you've got literally, about a dozen liberal mayors, including Mayor Eric Adams of New York City that have all filed briefs in this case trying to sway the court not to approve Alabama's congressional lines. That's why, according to another state that I pulled off of the Wisconsin Department of Justice website, yeah, I did. I mean, I went there. 21 attorneys general have filed a brief against Alabama's congressional, all the Democrat attorneys general have filed a brief urging the Supreme Court to literally take a hard look at this, and they should reject this attempt. They say, I'm saying this is amazing to me where we are. Alabama front and center, man. Alabama putting things in place that may or may not wind up standing up under judicial scrutiny at the Supreme Court level. But what it is doing is having an impact regardless. So yeah, here the bottom line is this. They are saying, the plaintiffs are saying, that when the lines, which are largely the same as what they've been for the last 3.5 decades, when the lines were redrawn, that they packed, and that's one of the words, they packed minority voters into one district. And that those who were not packed with them were then fractured. So you got packed and fracked, I guess, but they were fractured. They were diluted. In other words, if you are a black voter not within that one majority-minority district, that you are in some way diluted or watered down, your vote doesn't count as much. Now, here's the thing. They are assuming that blacks always vote Democrat. That's what they're assuming. I know it's not truth because I know black Alabamians who vote Republican. I know black Alabamians who claim to be independent. So the actual assumption being made by the plaintiffs here is they are all like-minded. They all tend to vote the same, meaning Democrat. Maybe there's still a plurality, but I don't think you can say all. Not anymore. I think folks are getting fed up. I think there's a lot of folks in black America that are sick and tired of being taken for granted. They're sick and tired of things like when Biden was campaigning and he said, man, if you ain't vote for me, you ain't black. That's just amazing to me that he could say that and get away with it. Can you imagine if a Republican had said that? No, that would still be being replayed on CNN. But what's happening right now in this case is the assumption is actually the blatant racist assumption being made is that if you are black, you only vote a certain way, and that you have now been diluted if you're not able to vote your way and see the win. So in order to prevail in this case, they have got to say race was the issue, and the only way to fix the issue is to apply more race. That's what they're doing. You did a bad thing on racism. So we need you to take racism and use it like this. It's not supposed to work that way. And in fact, where's the case that I've got? Maybe this one. No. I've got one of my cases, one of my write-ups here, I think I just threw it on the floor, is literally saying that what you're doing by applying that logic to this case, by applying that legal argument to this case, is that you are unjustifiably trying to make claim that flies in the face of the 14th Amendment, that you're literally saying, do that thing which the law says you're not supposed to do in order to fix that thing which the law says you're not supposed to do. That's a conundrum. But that's where we are. And I'm just telling you, coming up here very soon, we're going to find out whether Alabama has done something which will change the lay of the land for all 50 states. More to come. All right. Hey, listen, I'm going to go ahead and switch gears real quick in order to best introduce the topic we're going to hit next, the weaponization of government. So my friend Becky Gerritsen's been on this show before. Becky Gerritsen is no stranger to having government weaponized against her. You may remember that back in 2012, I believe it was, Becky Gerritsen was the head of the Wetumpka Tea Party, and they were being persecuted by Lois Lerner and the IRS. Becky Gerritsen herself wound up testifying before Congress about the weaponization of the IRS against conservative groups. And then, just to go ahead and fast forward now, Becky Gerritsen is now the head of Alabama's chapter of the Eagle Forum, advocating for conservative policy issues in Montgomery. And lo and behold, just the other day, because they dared at the Eagle Forum, along with, by the way, API and other groups like us, and this show advocated for it, they dared to support what we call the VCAP bill, the Vulnerable Child Protection Bill, that literally just stops these heinous transgender therapies against minors. Because they dared to advocate for that, the Biden Department of Justice has now subpoenaed all their records, all their emails, everything they've got. It's an unprecedented harassment. It's the weaponization of government. Well, my friend Becky Gerritsen is going to be on the phone with us here in just a minute. If you're concerned about 87,000 IRS agents, if you're concerned about the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago, if you're concerned about anything at all about federal government having such overreach under the Biden administration, then you want to hear this interview coming up next with Becky Gerritsen, Eagle Forum of Alabama. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.